Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Well, well, well. How did this happen? It went and made itself Friday once again. And that is delightful because it means Michael Harrison is here. Hello, sir.
Hello, Todd. How are you?
I am rocking and rolling.
Yes.
You know, you filled in for the last 2 weeks. I don't know if you remember this.
I don't remember anything. I got to tell you, my hat's off to you and to Will and to Ray. People who think that this is an easy business, my gosh. It is a definite cerebral workout. It's great. Thank you.
Yeah, but it's a good workout. It's better than digging ditches, I think.
It's a lot better than digging ditches in the heat or the cold. But that's a tremendous amount of work. It's very invigorating. And you have to admit, you know, these last couple of weeks have been just chock full of interesting news locally, regionally, nationally, internationally, even cosmically. It's been a heck of a time.
Even in the house, there's been a lot of news. Like everywhere you turn.
In the house, you mean like at home?
Yeah, everywhere. Well, you went through such a long list of places. I wanted to add something so I could be part of the conversation.
You're entitled to be part of the conversation.
Well, thank you for that. It is, I've said this before, and I'll say it again for folks who don't understand what this job in certain eras, in certain periods of time, can be a really hard job in that you're trying to find things that are interesting enough to have a fight about. And sometimes the political world is so quiet and so mundane that it's hard to find a story that gets the audience juiced up. And we're just living in the opposite times where sometimes several times a day there's a news story that comes down that everybody is juiced up over.
Well, sometimes
it's really
too
a great time to be doing this. Yeah. Well, that too, yes.
Yeah, but this was a week of BLM and MLB. How do you like that symmetry?
Well, this
Think
is
about
very
that.
Interesting.
It occurred to me.
Are you one of those people who does analysis of, numbers that pop up in certain patterns?
I like wordplay. I enjoy it. Was a week of BLM and MLB, PPP, PPE, and the CCP, the RNC, and a huge spike in FLA. And then we have polarized disagreement, bipolar disorder, and binary determination of reality. Summertime 2020, and the living ain't easy. The hacks are fishing. The COVID is high. And what the heck is going on in Portland?
Wow. You don't sleep, huh? You just think of these things at night.
They crawl into my brain. But the BLM and MLB hit me, the symmetry of that, you know, Black Lives Matter and Major League Baseball.
So what do you think about a major league sport that puts cardboard fans in the stands?
I think it's very funny.
And plays fans off of tape. It's like Major League Baseball is now a sitcom.
Yeah, canned laughter and computer-generated graphics.
I expect Lucille Ball to walk in.
You know, baseball started as a fake form of radio broadcasting. You know, I mean, broadcasting baseball started. First of all, let me clear the decks here. My head is foggy. Baseball is a great sport for radio, better than any other major sport, because baseball's linear. You know, the pitcher is winding up, the batter swings, he strikes out. You know, or he hits the ball, it's heading out to the field, the guy catches it,
or he runs.
In football, in hockey, in basketball, there's all these things going on at the same time. It's many pieces in motion. So the announcer has to pick and choose what's going on. And quite often, it's just a matter of keeping the listener up on major plays and scores.
Wait, in baseball? The announcers tell stories about, oh, last night after dinner, I bumped into so-and-so in the hall. They have so much time to fill. They're like talk hosts.
Exactly. It's you know, you know, what'd you think about what Trump said? Wait a second. The batter is eyeballing the catcher. But back in the beginning, they were not at the stadium. They used to get the reports of what happened in real time on the teletype, the ticker tape. And it would just basically say, Yankees are up, the Red Sox are up, hits to first base, just the basic information. And they'd sit there and they'd go, all right, the batter is eyeing the plate and he's rubbing the ball. And he takes the windup and the pitch is on its way. It's a strike. And none of that was happening. And you know who used to be a master of that in his early days of broadcasting was Ronald Reagan.
I can imagine Ronald Reagan being very good at it. He honed his craft.
Right. Well, here comes the ball. But I'm glad that baseball's back. And look, this whole year is a departure from sameness. And did you check out a little bit of the game last night on television? It was rained. I tuned in just to see because I'm not a big baseball fan. And it was rained out. There was a rain delay. Nobody there. The tarp was out there. And it was
real rain you were talking about?
Who knows? You know.
Actual rain was falling. Wow.
Yeah. But you know, we could be using sound effects on this program. We could have crowds cheering when we say something. We can make it sound like we have a live studio audience.
I love thinking about that, by the way. What? I love thinking about that radio used to operate in a time in which they had to fill every second of content like we do, but they had no recording devices and nobody transmitting signals to them that they could pick up if things got a little slow. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah, yeah. Well, radios, there was a time when radio had orchestras. They had every radio station had a band. It's way before our time, but
is that where it happened for the late night guys to have bands? It's just a holdover from 100 years ago?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, I believe so. It's fascinating. Take a look at YouTube, you know, old radio shows. Some of the great singers of that era, before there were hit records, they would be radio stars. They'd play live theater and they would go on the radio. There'd be an audience in the radio station and there would be a large studio and a band would play. As a matter of fact, when the radio went through an evolution and suddenly they started to do something remarkable. They installed turntables in the radio studio and they started to fire to save money. To save money, they'd fire the orchestra and they'd play records. And that was considered the death of radio. It was considered automation. It was considered fake. As a matter of fact, one of the first major DJ shows was called Make Believe Ballroom. I think Martin Block did it at WNEW in New York. It was called Make Believe Ballroom because he was playing records and talking. And the concept was that it's a make believe ballroom, that, you know, just like make believe audience in the baseball game. And
all right, you're triggering another memory for me. I remember this show, Sing Along with Mitch, when I was a little kid. And Mitch, what was his last name?
Mitch Miller.
Mitch Miller. Mitch Miller would sit there, I think, with a newspaper and in an empty theater where he was sitting in one of the seats. And then there was an orchestra on stage that would play. Is that how it worked?
You had the singers on stage and you had to follow the bouncing ball. This was a TV show. And the Yellow Rose of Texas.
The bar.
You know, they did songs like the Yellow Rose of Texas. That pops
but
in my
I
mind.
But I never got why they had him sitting in a theater like that. And it sounds like it harkens back to this era that you're talking about.
What was he doing? I don't remember him sitting in a theater in any of the films I've seen. This is all before my time, but I study this stuff.
Sing Along with Mitch, I'm pretty sure. I haven't seen it since I was seven. But he would sit in a, you know, he would have one of the empty seats. The whole theater was empty. He'd sit there and watch this performance, and he'd announce what was going on. It was like he was the DJ for the songs, and then we were supposed to sing along at home to the bouncing ball hitting the song, the word that we were supposed to be saying. It was pretty bizarre.
Mitch Miller was a mogul in the music business, and the television show Sing Along with Mitch and the albums that he made were just, it was sort of like a side thing. He was what was called the director of A&R at Columbia Records back in that day. We're talking 40s, 50s.
Yeah, so he was a bigwig.
Bigwig. He was a powerhouse. He determined who got signed and who didn't, and who got promoted and didn't, what songs they put on their albums and on their singles. And on top of it, he had this this show called Sing Along with Mitch, but that wasn't his main deal. He was a businessman.
So he was pushing music. That's what that TV show was then. It was a wig to present music out there.
Yeah. All I remember was Leslie Uggams, I think, started on that show, or was it on another?
Did she really?
Or it was on Lawrence Welk. I don't recall, but the music was very, very well crafted in terms of the engineering. It was echoey, had a lot of reverb, It was very, very, polished and kind of commercial. It wasn't rock and Buddy Holly appearing on the Arthur Murray dance party. There's a YouTube video of Buddy Holly and Arthur Murray. It's like New York Society. It's live, and Mrs. Murray, it's for older folks, she says, but here on the Arthur Murray show, we like to play what the young people are into, and we have for you a rock and roll specialist, Buddy Holly, and he comes out with his
rock and rolls,
and he sang Peggy's. It's all on YouTube. Tremendous stuff there. Tremendous. I love the history
you've told
of the media.
That most of your life is now spent on YouTube, and it sounds great that you get to, you get the stuff you get to get refreshed on, which I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And the stuff you don't know, you get to know everything, and you come across like somebody who has had experience going back a couple hundred years, and I think it's because of YouTube that you can do that. That you've had.
No, actually, I have experience going back a couple of hundred years.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll continue with Michael Harrison. Stay with us on WTIC. It's First Hour Friday. Talking to Michael Harrison. So, Michael, you mentioned Leslie Uggams. I do want to move on from this pop culture stuff, but you mentioned Leslie Uggams, and it's such a blast from the past. I'm thinking, what was her hit song? She must have had a hit song. And then I looked her up, and I saw that she was starred in Roots, which I didn't realize she was an actress. And then I just wanted to mention what Google – you know how Google does those boxes with the most popular questions regarding a – certain person, so you don't have to actually go to a separate page. You can drop down a box, and it shows you quick. And I love these questions. People also ask, Google says, is Leslie Uggams blind? How much is Leslie Uggams worth? Is Leslie Uggams still married? And where does Leslie Uggams live? I just thought maybe you'd want to do a little quiz and
I don't know much about Leslie Uggams other than I thought she had an interesting name. And I remembered somewhere in my youth seeing her on television and wondering whether she was able to sing double-tracked. I always was fascinated by that when singers would sing double-tracked. And,
sing along to themselves?
Yeah, they harmonize with themselves. And then and that was something that, I wished I could do, but I tried. As much as I tried, I couldn't do it. It was very hard to sing out of both sides of your mouth. With two voices.
Oh, at once. I see.
At
live.
At once, right. Yeah. I didn't realize that they had recording techniques. So what do you think was the outstanding moment of the baseball game last night?
I don't know. I didn't watch it. You watched it.
But it's going to be an iconic piece. You talk about iconic clips on YouTube.
Yes, I'm sorry. The great COVID genius showed that he... So that was one of the more ridiculous throws I've ever seen for and you see some awfully bad ones. But he what was really interesting about that throw was that it looked like he had never actually held a ball before and tried to throw one.
Or it's just hard to throw a ball for whatever it is, 90 feet or something, and you're on television, you're in front of thousands and thousands of cardboard people, and you're surrounded by Major League Baseball players who are all about 22 years old, and you have to throw the ball. You know, you could freeze up a little bit. Have you thrown a ball lately?
Yes. Yeah, once in a while I throw a ball.
Yeah, I'm not very good at it. Throw a snowball in the winter. You pick up the snow, you throw it, you try to hit a tree.
Yeah, and it goes backwards.
Yeah, well, his ball went sideways. It was amazing. The catcher looked like, what? What? Talk about a wild ball. But you got to give Fauci a little bit of credit for, you know, having a good sense of humor and being a sport.
He's just trying to bend the curve. It doesn't always work, you know?
Yeah. Meanwhile, Fauci said that he would not fly right now and that he would not eat in a restaurant, which I find very interesting.
I wonder why that would be. I don't trust what he says, by the way, because he said so many different things. Like, why would he not eat at a restaurant? He thinks it's
a risk. He thinks it's a high-risk place to be. Obviously, maybe he doesn't like how much it costs. You know, maybe we're interpreting it wrong. Maybe he never ate in restaurants.
Exactly. Just went to McDonald's. I just find that, well, maybe that's just messaging of trying to encourage people not to engage in normal activities, but it's weird because certainly if you're in the Northeast, if you're in New York or New Jersey or Connecticut or Massachusetts, these are places where COVID is not happening right now. And the idea of, I'm eating routinely now in restaurants, and I don't see any issue with it. So I'm confused about why they would.
So how would the restaurants? I have not been. I'm down in Florida at the moment. I'm working my way back to you, babe, and I'm trying to get back to New England, but the idea of flying into Bradley and having to fill out a form and all that stuff is not something that I relish.
Well, they'd lock you up for 2 weeks.
And fine you $1,000 if you bitch and moan about it. So it's not But I went for a COVID test for the first time a couple of days ago. And just in preparation of my saying, hey, it's about time to come home. It'll be interesting. It'll be like about 7 more days before I find out. Every ache and pain you get, you think, well, I've got it. You know, if you're fatigued, hard to breathing, all the normal things that every human being has. We're all tired.
Up here, there's nothing going on that would make you feel uneasy. So my wife, Rosalie's very nervous about the virus, but she doesn't think anything of going out to restaurants. She's totally comfortable. And that's
so what are the restaurants like? Because I haven't been in a restaurant since March.
There's 50%. They're allowed to have 50% capacity, and tables have to be, I forget, 10 feet apart or 8 feet apart. So there's a built-in social distancing that's enforced by the restaurants. And besides that, it's normal, except you walk in wearing your mask, you sit down, and while you're seated, you're allowed to not wear your mask. But if you get up to go to the restroom, you have to remember to put your mask back on. Otherwise, you suddenly become this pariah who gets ugly looks. But the rest of the experience is very normal, and it works out fine. Michael Harrison is here. We'll break for news. We'll continue the conversation. Stay with us, please, on WTIC. It's Friday. Michael Harrison is here. And yes, we do eat out because life is good in New England, despite COVID. And yeah, down in Florida, tell us what's going on there. Does nobody go out of the house?
I ventured out to go to the CVS that was giving tests, and I hadn't been on that side of the town. I don't go out a lot. First of all, I work a lot. I'm able to work from my place, so I'm busy. It's not like I'm not busy. I'm not sitting around watching TV or YouTube, as it may have seemed from our earlier conversation. I'm working. But I've been staying indoors. I have a balcony so I can go outside, but I'm not on the street. So I hit the streets, and my wife and I, we drove about 5 miles to the place. We had an appointment, so we didn't have to wait. And it was in the car, it was drive through. And I noticed that a number of the iconic businesses in this area, I'm down in the Jupiter area of Florida, which is a, you know, part of Palm Beach County, which is a very hustling, bustling, busy place. A lot of business here, a lot of people. And I couldn't believe how many of the stores and the restaurants that I just have come over the years to know as being, you know, staples of the area were out of business, were closed for lease, signs in the windows. It was very, it was almost like post-apocalyptic. The streets were pretty dead. There's some people out. Everybody that you'd see, 9 out of 10 were wearing masks. Of course, the rule is you have to wear a mask in many places. And it just was, it was very depressing. It was shocking. And I hope that, you know, it passes and that down here it becomes, you know, safer and more normal. I just hope a lot of the people with a lot of small restaurants, small businesses, the furniture stores were closed up. It just was very, you know, it's a very sad thing with the businesses going out of business and closing up. That's a terrible thing.
We talked, we had a COVID conversation a few weeks ago, and you said something very profound and I thought illuminating, and that was, well, why do you think that anything's going to go back to normal? Why do you think we should be the way we were? And the apparatus inside of us that forces us back to, or tries to force us to force our lives back to where our lives were, is so powerful that it's automatic. And I hadn't really considered, what if we are not able to ever go back to the way things were? And that's what you're living, it sounds like, in Florida, if you go out to experience it even.
No, exactly. I mean, I have lived a very protected life since March. I haven't traveled. I haven't gone out a lot. I haven't, you know, I've made a couple of quick visits to supermarkets. My life basically centers around the drugstore, the UPS store, the United States Postal Service, and supermarket. And I have to tell you, my wife, Bernadette, is the brave one. She's been the one that has done most of the errands. She wears a mask. She's very fastidious about, you know, the sanitizer on the hands and all that. And mm-hmm. She brings back the food. I do the cooking. And all of a sudden, you start to get very used to this existence. And you go out again and you realize that it's a different world. I don't know what normal will be anymore because I'm not even sure what normal was. But it makes you stop and reevaluate how fragile our way of life, you know, our lifestyle, the things that we do. We fall into patterns. We get together with certain people. When I say we, I mean all of us. We go yes. to certain restaurants, certain stores, certain things. I haven't worn socks since March. The last time I went out was the end of February. Believe it or not, I had dinner at Donald Trump's golf club, and got all dressed up with a bunch of Trump fans, and we had dinner. I had no idea that would be the last time I'd wear a suit, that I'd have real leather shoes on. I live in sweatpants, sneakers that don't have shoelaces, no socks. I haven't had a haircut in about 7 or 8 months. I shaved the other day. I went through 3 or 4 razors. You know, I had to use a scissors, which was weird. It's just, you know, it's like, wow, we're going back to a primitive existence. I don't know what else
but,
to say.
This puts the focus back on that dynamic of dealing with the virus isn't just about dealing with the virus on the macro sense, the political sense. It's also about managing what kind of world are we going to live in. And right now in New England, it feels like life is returning to normal. And there's this strange dynamic of the rest of the country going through this explosion that New York went through a few months ago. And the binary aspect of it, there's the rest of the country and there's us, it seems. And we, I don't know if we've got a different version of the virus or what's going on, but we don't seem to have any problems with it being contagious in a significant way. And
well,
it
I'll
never
tell you
was.
Why. I have a theory. And that is New Englanders are generally, I hate to say this, but they're generally smarter about things. And a lot of parts of the country, they're arrogant, they're frivolous, They're immature. They are rebellious just for the sake of it. They have their head in the sand. And New Englanders are the salt of the earth. I mean, New Englanders, okay, is this what we have to do? We're going to be careful. All right. They tend to be smarter about these kinds of things. What I worry about is what's happened in a number of places where they thought they were out of the woods, just like you're saying, and then they take their eye off the ball and the thing comes back. So, you know, I just when you think it's safe to go in the water, you know, to use the old expression.
Well, that's what's strange to me. So how do you look at California? Do you think they took their eye off the ball? Or
yeah, I do.
Is something you do? Okay.
I because think also they, California a has a more transient thing going on. And I don't know, maybe more people coming
well, so
over
does
the
Florida,
border.
So Florida, right? I've been thinking about the border.
But more so California. In terms of the borders, and I, you know, I don't want to get into a whole immigration thing, but they're all you have to take into account every possible variable that leads to this thing happening the way it's happening.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do, and those are my two. I think there's travel from South America that happens through some of these states, like California, or through Mexico, and so the virus could come that way, like it presented first. A big problem in New York, because New York is the center of international travel. Florida gets a lot of international travel into Miami. Texas is one of those states, too, I presume. I don't really know about Texas, but I think so.
No, it is
and
true.
I'm wondering if that may be combined with a higher level of contagion. But your cultural comment that people are a little more reckless and that we tend to be cautious in New England, that difference might make all the difference.
Well, I have lived in multiple places in my life. I'm from New York. I've lived in New York. I've lived in Southern California. I've lived in Florida. But the longest place I've lived in my adult life, in my whole life, has been in New England. And I find that the people in New England are my favorite. I find them very, very down to earth. I find the people in New England cultured. I find them respecting tradition, family, and being sensible, common sensible, about things like this. This really relies on common sense. I also find that there is a disconnect between what some people say, I'm not going to wear a mask, and what they do.
Elsewhere, you mean?
No, even in New England, everywhere. That people, that's why polls are no longer accurate. People don't necessarily say what they do. But what you do and what you say, I find here in the 2020 to be not as, the corresponding, the ratio between what you say and what you do is not as close as it used to be. I think that.
Well, I wonder why that would be going through a change. Do you have a theory on that?
I think people are afraid to be judged. I think people are concerned about speaking up. I think people are afraid of engaging with strange sources of information. You know, there was a time, there's a survey. I'm going to take a survey. Now they'll steal your identity. They'll come to your house. We live in a very untrusting time, and there's reason not to be trusting. So all of this stuff plays into the soup. You know, that society is. It's not all clear cut. It's all overlapping facts, input, theories. And there's a lot of mystery around it all. There's a lot of mystery. And that's one of the reasons, you know, you said before you don't trust Anthony Fauci because he changes what he says. Well, part of it is because he works for the government. But the other part is there's new information coming. This is a novel coronavirus. Novel means we never had it before. Coronavirus is a whole set of viruses. So this is a new one. When we learn it, then we'll do things that will say, well, look, we didn't do that before. Well, we didn't know. We didn't know
that's fine. But that's the other reason I don't trust them so much is because they try to put this air of authority on what they're saying as if they do know. And then when what they've been telling us for a couple of months proves wrong, they don't really make a big announcement about how we messed up, we had it wrong. We have to kind of pick up on our own that the information is different now.
Well, that's interesting that you see it that way. I see it the opposite. I wish they'd give us more clear answers. I find a lot of them hedge their bets. They say, well, you know, it's, we really can't say for sure. And that, I guess, is honest. I want them to say, here's exactly what it is, you know, but they don't know. But
I'll give you an example. There's I've got a bunch of cuts of him in January and February, and even I think up to maybe the first week of March, where he's talking about masks as things that don't. That is a mistake to think about a mask as connecting to a pandemic like this. And then he suddenly changed his tune. And there wasn't an explanation that I heard about why
he was suddenly. Oh, yeah, he was called on the carpet for that. And he said the main reason he did it was that at that time there was a shortage of masks. They were afraid that there was going to be a run on masks, and he was afraid that healthcare workers and frontline workers would not be able to get the masks they need because they were in the gravest danger of contracting the disease. That was his reason for doing it. He lied.
I did hear him say that. Yeah, but why? But that's my problem. He was saying masks don't have, are you ready for this word, Michael?
Efficacy.
in fighting the disease. And how can you, if you need to lie, you tell a different lie. Don't wear a mask. Nobody should wear a mask. Stay away from the mask. But to actually give us misinformation, I have a problem with that.
I understand. You should. I have a problem with a lot of these things. I have one of the things that this era has done, it has exposed the boundaries of people's credibility and their knowledge. It's exposing a lot of things. It's exposing.
Yeah, I want the group search. I want us to go on the search together. I want them to tell us, look, we're not 100% because we've never dealt with this virus before. Here's what we know from other viruses, and here's the assumption we're going on. But this is going to be modified every day, and we're going to give you updates, so pay attention. I feel like that would be much more healthy. The trouble is they want to control us, I believe. The politicians want to have maximum credibility because they feel they've got to protect us, if I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, from something that could be a dangerous situation. And ultimately, they undermine their credibility by striking that pose when they're dealing with information flow that's in flux. Hang on, Michael. We'll take our last break, and we'll continue the conversation. Michael Harrison is here. It's Friday. We've got full phone lines. We're not going to take calls, though, until after the news. So you can hang on if you want or call back later. And we will take a break right now on WTIC. Yeah, WTIC on a Friday. Michael Harrison. We just kind of work our way through. Isn't that a great tune?
Yeah.
After all these years.
It's perfect rock and roll song. John Bonham on those drums. Dum, 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 and Robert Plant wailing with that quasi-falsetto rock and roll voice. Jimmy Page, you know, grinding on the guitar. And the other guy, John Paul.
The other guy.
Yeah,
John Paul
boom,
Jones,
boom,
wasn't
boom,
it?
Boom, 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 boom. Great song. Very good taste, Michael. Go.
And you know all the parts.
Yeah, I do. I know all the parts. Absolutely.
You're multilingual when it comes to music.
As a matter of fact, Mike Olko and I were communicating with each other during the break via text, talking about how some of the songs, that the music that's behind the commercials, become like an earworm. And I love the one about She Served Too, that song in the background. Like, ooh, I look forward to it. I love music. And I find myself I'm not a person who's able to work when there's music on, because I'll stop working and I'll listen to the music. So people say, how do you go for hours without listening to music when you're working? And I say, because I can't work when the music is on. So
I'm like that, too. It's way too distracting. The music is front and center.
Yes.
If it's on. I don't understand how people can have music on in the background. Even classical, I can't do it. A hook will get in my head.
Yeah.
And I get focused on the hook.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's funny how our brains work. So where do you want to go now? It's 3:54, and what do you want to talk about?
Well,
I don't, mean to
I don't know. Now that you laid it right down at my feet, I'm not sure what to say about it.
No, but we're going. We're heading someplace. It's it's so special when we talk to each other. Like, you know, we touch on some things that are really interesting.
Yes, but it's all organic. So when you suddenly say, it's like you just dropped a bomb in the middle of the
flow.
So I'm not sure what to suggest.
Yeah.
But there, the I love the COVID conversation and how it plays into the trust aspect of politics, because it's not often that we actually depend on our elected leaders these days. And it's not often that they see themselves in a position of responsibility. Mostly they see themselves as political actors, like governors are trying to get things passed, and they're trying to build public support for particular pieces of legislation they want. And why do they want the legislation? They might not even know why they want the legislation. Their party wants it, and they want to be cooperative. Maybe they don't even like the legislation. But, you know, Ned Lamont, you spent a year campaigning for tolls, which nobody wanted, and he had campaigned against having tolls, and then he flip-flopped when he got elected, and then spent the next year spending all of his time campaigning for tolls. But in retrospect, he spent that time telling us the future of Connecticut depended on it, that we'd never be financially viable if we didn't have that money to fix our infrastructure. And for the last 4 months, nobody's cared at all about having
what you're talking about is profound, but because a major crisis makes other issues less important. We create importance around things simply because there's nothing else. It's importance in a vacuum. Something else happens, we're not talking about climate change. We're not even talking about the economy in a normal way. We're talking about economic survival. We had a robust economy 8 months ago. Now we're talking about, you know, how many businesses are going to be able to crawl back. We're talking about what's going to happen to the value of our homes. What's going to happen to the value of the dollar with all these trillions of fake bucks being pumped into the economy? Is there going to be inflation, deflation? What is unemployment going to be like in 6 months? What about the fact that the $600 is running out tomorrow? All of these things are things we never dreamed we'd be talking about 8 months ago.
Yeah.
Are you there?
That was perfect. That was just excellent. And you ran us up to the end of the end of the hour.
That was my purpose.
So really good. Well, thank you. It was...
Hey,
you're
Todd,
like a wind-up doll, a radio wind-up doll.
I'm kind of handy to have around, but hey, listen, it was great talking to you today, and thank you for everything. You know, I can't wait for the day that you and I are sitting in a place having a cup of coffee together, and
in our rockers.
That would be nice.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Michael Harrison, Talkers Magazine. Visit talkers.com. We will see you next week, sir.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.